fair swirl around me, sucking all the air out of the room and making it hard to breathe or think. You slept with Callum's wife, I accuse. Steve's jaw clenches for a moment, his face haggard, and then he nods abruptly. He can't even bring himself to say it out loud. Why?
I always loved her,
he admits in a hoarse voice. And in her way, she loved me. That's not what this letter says.
She did, he insists.
We saw her at the same time, but Callum got to her first. I just gape at him. Oh my God. He sounds like a little boy whose toy was taken away. So when Callum was busy saving your company, you told Maria he was cheating on her? My thoughts are jumbled and crazy, one leaping after the other, but I think I'm starting to piece it all together. That's how you got her into bed? His eyes shift away to stare somewhere over my shoulder. Was Callum actually cheating? I demand. Was that true? When he can't look me in the eye, I know it's not. The fragile relationship we were building crashes to the ground. I can't respect him. I barely like him right now. He slept with his best friend's wife. Worse, he told Maria that her husband betrayed her. And she'd killed herself. Steve O'Halloran pretty much drove that poor, messed-up woman to suicide. I suddenly feel like throwing up. Bending down, I pick up the letter and clutch it tight. We're taking this to Callum. He thinks his wife killed herself because of him. The boys believe the same thing. You need to tell them all the truth. Anger flickers in Steve's eyes.
No, he snaps. This stays between us. I told you before it would ruin those boys' lives.
You think they aren't already dead inside because their mother killed herself? The only person this letter will ruin is you, and frankly, Steve, I don't care if it does. The royals need to know the truth. With that, I grab my phone and barrel past him, practically hurling myself out the door.
Don't you fucking walk away from me!
His enraged voice brings a jolt of fear. I start to run, making it all the way to the living room before I'm suddenly yanked backwards. The momentum sends me flying butt first onto the carpet, inches away from the fireplace where Brooke died. And suddenly I'm struck with the most horrible thought. Was it you? I blurt out. Steve doesn't answer me. He just looms over me. Breathing hard, his features creased with frustration. Did you kill Brooke? My voice is weak now, shaky from horror.
No, he growls. I didn't.
But I see it, the flicker of guilt in his eyes. Oh my God, I whisper. You did. You killed her and then tried to pin it on Reed. You murdered her.
It was an accident, he roars.
The deafening volume has me flinching. I stumble to my feet, trying to put as much distance between us as I can, but Steve steps forward and all I can do is back up until my spine is flat against the fireplace.
It was a goddamn accident, okay?
My father's eyes are wild now, red and narrowed and terrifying. How? I stammer. Why?
I just got off a damned plane after months of being trapped on some godforsaken island.
He's screaming now.
And I get home to see goddamn Reed leaving the penthouse. What the hell was I supposed to think? I already knew that my wife was screwing Callum's eldest.
His breathing is shallow.
And then Reed, you think I was going to take that lying down after everything I'd just gone through?
Reed never touched Dinah, I croak.
I didn't know that.
Each breath that leaves his mouth is sharp and laced with panic.
I took the service elevator up to the penthouse. I was going to confront my cheating bitch of a wife, the wife who fucking tried to kill me.
His fury is polluting the air, intensifying the fear pounding through my blood. I try to creep to the side, but he moves forward again. I'm trapped between his angry, shaking body and the hard stone of the fireplace.
I walked in, and she was here. Looking at this damned picture of us.
He snatches a framed photograph off the mantel and whips it into the wall over my head. Shards of glass rain down on us, a few pieces catching in my hair. My heart pounds so fast I'm scared it will give out on me. I have to get out of here. I need to. Steve is confessing to murder. He's unraveling right in front of me. I can't be here when he loses it completely.
And I got angry, like any normal red-blooded man, like your precious Reed. I grabbed her by the hair and slammed her forehead against the mantel. I'd never hit a woman before in my life, but goddamn Ella, that woman needed hitting. She needed to pay for what she'd done to me.
But it wasn't Dinah, I whisper.
Shame swamps his face, cutting through some of the anger. I didn't know that. I thought it was. They look the same from behind, damn it. He seems to be struggling for air.
I saw her face as she fell forward, but it was too late. I couldn't catch her. She hit her head on the mantel.
He pants in dismay.
Severed her damned spinal cord.
I gulp hard.
Oh, okay. Then it was an accident, and you need to tell the police exactly what happened.
We're not involving the police. He booms, then raises one hand as if he's going to hit me.
I brace myself, but the blow never comes. Instead, Steve's big palm falls to his side.
Don't look at me like that, he orders. I'm not going to hurt you. You're my daughter.
And Dinah is his wife, but he was still going to hurt her. My pulse careens again. I can't be here. I can't.
You have to tell the truth, I plead with my father. If you don't, Reed will go to jail. You think I don't know that? I've been racking my brain for weeks trying to figure out how to get him out of this. I might not want him screwing my kid, but I don't want to see that boy go to prison.
Then why haven't you saved him? I want to scream. But I already know the answer to that. No matter what he tries to say now, Steve was absolutely going to let Reed take the fall for Brooke's death. Because Steve O'Halloran only cares about himself. That's all he's ever cared about.
You and me, he suddenly says, his eyes taking on an animated light. We'll figure this out together. Please, Ella, let's just sit down and talk it through and see how we can save Reed. Maybe we can pin it on Dinah.
Like hell you will.
Steve spins around at the sound of Dinah's voice. Me, I've never been happier to see Dinah in my entire life. Steve's distraction is just the opportunity I need to dart away from the fireplace. I race toward the blonde as if my life depends on it. Because maybe it does.
You killed Brooke, Dinah spits out, her horrified gaze glued to her husband.
Her hand shakes. I see a glint of black, and that's when I realize what she's holding. A small, black revolver.
Put the gun down, Steve tells her, sounding annoyed.
You killed Brooke, she repeats. And this time, it's not a question. I plaster myself to Dinah's side, but she surprises me by addressing me in a gentle voice. Stand behind me, Ella.
Put the gun down,
Steve orders again. He lunges forward, but Dinah swings the gun up.
Don't take another step.
He stops in his tracks.
Put the gun down, he says for the third time.
His voice is soft now, measured.
Ella, call 911,
Dinah tells me, without taking her eyes off Steve. I'm too scared to move. I'm terrified that the gun might go off by accident, and I'll get caught in the crossfire.
For God's sake, Dinah, you two are being ridiculous. Brooke's death was an accident, and even if it wasn't, who the hell cares? She was poison. She was a piece of garbage.
He lunges toward us again, and Dinah pulls the trigger. It all happens so fast I can't even make sense of it. One second Steve is on his feet, the next he's on the carpet, groaning in agony as he clutches his left arm. My ears are ringing like an entire row of carnival games. I've never heard a gunshot in real life before, and it's so deafening. I'm worried it might have shattered my eardrums. I feel sick, really sick, like I'm going to vomit all over my feet. And my heart is racing faster than it ever has before.
You shot me, you bitch, Steve mumbles, staring up at Dinah.
Rather than acknowledge him, Dinah calmly turns to me and repeats her earlier request.
Ella, call 911.
Chapter 35. Reed. What's wrong? Are the first words out of my mouth when I answer the phone. You need to come to the penthouse, Ella gasps between deep, heaving breaths. Come now, bring Callum, bring everyone, but especially Callum. Ella? The line goes dead. Damn it, she hung up on me. I don't waste another second, though. She called and needs me. She needs all of us. I'm off the bed and out the door in the next second. With my fist pounding on Easton's door and then Sebastian's, I scream downstairs for Dad. Dad, something's wrong with Ella. I press redial, but she doesn't pick up. What's going on? Easton bursts out of his room as I'm racing by. It's Ella. Something's wrong. Leaping 5 steps at a time, I fly down the stairs. Above and behind me, I hear the slamming of doors followed by running footsteps. Dad meets me at the bottom of the stairs. What is it? He asks in concern. Ella's in trouble. She needs us. Us? Confusion flickers across his face. I shake my phone at him. She just called, told me she needs all of us to come over now. His eyes widen, but he too jumps into motion. We'll take my car, let's go. We run outside and pile into Dad's Mercedes. I take shotgun while the twins and East settle into the back. Dad presses the gas pedal to the floor and tears down the driveway, barely waiting for the gates to open wide enough for the car to speed through. Meanwhile, I'm redialing and redialing Ella's phone. After my 5th attempt, she finally answers. I can't talk, Reed. The police are here. Where are you? I tense. The police? Who's that? Dad demands from the driver's seat. It's Ella, I tell him. To Ella, I ask. Why are the police there? Her voice is strained. I'll explain it all when you get here. She disconnects again. God damn it! I slap my phone against my leg. I'm getting real tired of her hanging up on me. East leans forward, sticking his head between the 2 front seats. What did she say? Dad runs a red light, takes a hard right at about 50 miles an hour, and then careens wildly down another street. I brace myself against the door as I check the time. We're about 10 minutes from the city. I quickly text Ella. Be there in 10. What did she say? East repeats in my ear. I toss the phone into the center console and turn to look at my brothers. The twins are pale and quiet, but East is frantic. She said that we needed to get to the penthouse. All of us. I pause and turn to my father. She said specifically to bring Dad. Why in the hell did she ask for me? He wonders, not taking his eyes off the road. Another hard turn has all of us sliding to the left before righting ourselves in our seats. I have no idea. Steve, East pipes up. Has to be about him. Dad's jaw hardens. Call Greer, have him meet us at the penthouse. Not a bad idea. I dial our lawyer, who, unlike Ella, actually answers his phone. Reed, what can I do for you? You need to meet us at Steve's place, I instruct. There's a half beat of silence, and then, what in the world have you done? I pull the phone away from my ear to stare at the mouthpiece in disbelief. This fucking guy thinks I did something. Dad makes a frustrated noise in the back of his throat. You've pled guilty to involuntary manslaughter. Of course he thinks you did something. I frown, but place the phone against my ear again. It's Ella. Something's happened, and Dad thinks you should get over there. Then I hang up on him, because we've arrived at the condo complex and there are police cars everywhere. Dad gapes at all the cruisers. What in the hell? Heart in my throat, I jump out before the car stops. Reed, get back here! My father yells. Wait a damn second! But more car doors slamming indicate my brothers are hot on my heels. The people in the lobby are a blur as I race toward the elevator bank. Miraculously, the brass doors are sliding open as I skid to a stop. Impatiently, I wait for the 2 uniforms to step out, and then I dive inside. My brothers jump into the car as the doors are closing. She's okay, man, East reassures me, slightly out of breath. Really? I stare at him. It's 10:30. There are 12 police cars out front. Ella called in a panic, saying she needed all of us here. She called, though, he points out. The world's fucked up when East is the calm one. While my heart is beating so hard, it feels like it'll leap out of my chest. I shove a hand through my hair and glare at the lights, willing the elevator to move faster. What do you think is going on? Sawyer asks in a subdued voice. Probably Dinah, his twin guesses. I slam my fist against the doors. That's my fear, too. You do that again and we might be stuck in here, East warns. Right, then I guess I'll have to punch you in the face. Then Ella will get mad at you. She loves my pretty face. He pats the side of his cheek. The twins muffle nervous laughs. I ball my hands into fists and think about punching all 3 of them. Fortunately for them, the elevator grinds to a halt and I bolt out. There are two police officers in the short hallway leading to the double-door entrance of the penthouse. The tall, thin one places a hand on the door, while the female's hand moves to the top of her gun. "Where are you going?" one of them demands. "We live here," I lie. The two officers look at each other. Behind me, I can feel all three of my brothers tense up. I don't care if I punch these two cops out. I'm already going to prison. I charge forward, but just as I close the distance, a familiar face appears in the door. Detective Schmidt takes in the scene with one sweeping glance. Then she pushes the door open. "It's fine. They can come in." I'm not about to question my sudden good fortune. I hurry inside, past the huge portraits of Dinah, and into the living room, calling my girl's name. "Ella!" I finally spot her, huddled next to Dinah, of all people, on a sofa facing the terrace doors. I rush over and drag her away from the couch. "Are you okay?"
"I'm fine," she assures me. "Where's Callum?"
Why is she so hung up on my dad? I run my hands up and down her arms while I look her over. There doesn't appear to be anything wrong with her. She's pale and cold. Her hair is tangled and crazy, but she doesn't seem to be hurt. I clutch her to my chest, pushing her face flat against my hammering heart.
"You sure you're okay, baby?"
"I'm okay."
She hugs me back. Over her head, I stare at Dinah, whose normally immaculate face is tear-stained. Her eyes are red and her hair is messy, too.
"What the hell?"
Easton says, sounding as confused as I feel.
Did one of you shoot Steve?"
I swing around and realize I'd run past Steve. He's slumped against the base of the fireplace, his back pressed against the stones. He's in handcuffs. Ella shudders.
"What the hell is going on?"
Dad booms. The grief lines on Dinah's face smooth out, a calculated gleam entering her eyes. She leans against the low-backed sofa and slides an arm across the top.
"Steve attempted to silence Ella when she discovered that he was the one who killed Brooke. I saved her. You can thank me later."
I hear a couple of curses as I stare at Ella.
"Is this true?"
She gulps and then nods slowly.
"All of it."
There are other important things that Dinah just said, but the only one that sticks out is that Steve tried to kill Ella. That's almost too much for my tired brain to take in. "Are you hurt?" I repeat, scanning her body again for signs of injury.
"I'm fine, I swear."
She squeezes my arm.
"Are you? Are you going to be okay?"
Because my mind is spinning, I just nod like an idiot, but the urgency in her voice suddenly registers. The new pieces of information tumble around and over and on top of each other until one by one they fall into place. Dinah's tears, Ella's frantic request that I come, that we all come, Steve trying to kill Ella. It finally hits me. Steve tried to pin Brooke's murder on me? At Ella's tiny grimace, I become so angry I'm nearly blinded. I find myself halfway toward the fireplace before I realize I've even moved. Dimly, I hear my name being called, but all my attention is focused on the man who helped me learn to ride my first bike, who threw footballs with me and my brothers. Hell, he gave me my first condom. A medic kneels next to him, checking Steve's blood pressure while Detective Cousins stands to one side. Ella appears beside me, placing a warning hand on my arm.
"Don't,"
she whispers. Somehow I find the strength not to lunge at Steve. All I want to do is beat the ever-loving piss out of my godfather, but I close my eyes and find an ounce of self-restraint in the bottom of my churning gut.
"Why?"
I spit out in Steve's direction.
"Why did you do it?"
My brothers form a wall behind me. Dad comes to stand on my other side. Steve's eyes skip from Seb to Sawyer, linger on Easton, land on me, and then fix on my father.
"It was an accident," Steve croaks.
"What was an accident?" Dad asks, his voice hollowed by pain. "You trying to kill your own daughter, or trying to pin a murder charge on my son? How long have you been back? Were you screwing Brooke, too?" Steve shakes his head.
"It's not like that, man. She was a disease, though, turning you and Reed against each other."
Dad's arm lashes out, and a lamp crashes into the stone not far from Steve's head. We all flinch.
"We were never against each other. A woman would have never come between us. Brooke would have. Dinah, too."
He sneers at the blonde sitting 10 feet away.
"All these women we've been with, Callum, they're out to destroy us. Hell, including your wife."
Ella makes a small, distressed sound. Dad and I both look at her, but she quickly averts her eyes.
"What's wrong?"
I ask roughly. She sucks in a breath.
"Ella," Steve pleads from the fireplace, "they don't need to know.
She takes another breath.
Damn it.
Steve curses, then glances wildly at Detective Cousins. Get me out of here, will you? It was a flesh wound. I don't need any medical attention. Just haul me off to jail. You've already read me my rights, goddammit.
And I know then what Steve is afraid to admit. What Ella must have discovered.
This is about Mom, isn't it? I say in a hoarse voice. I don't know if I'm asking Ella or Steve or Dad or the cosmic universe. All I know is that the second I mention my mother, Steve's entire face goes ashen. Ella clutches my hand, but she's still not looking me in the eye.
Steve and your mom had an affair,
she whispers. Silence crashes over the room. Even Detective Cousins looks startled, and he didn't even fucking know my mother.
Ella, Steve begs. Please.
She ignores him, turning her distraught gaze to my father.
Maria wrote him a letter saying that she couldn't live with the guilt anymore. I found it in the room where Brooke was staying. She tried to hide it.
Her sad eyes shift back to me, then toward my brothers.
It wasn't your fault.
Her voice catches on the last word. Dad stumbles backward, catching himself against the edge of a table. The words Ella just said aren't registering in my brain. They're just hard consonants, soft vowels. They aren't understandable. Sawyer and Seb are rooted to the tiled floor. I'm frozen, too, caught up in the horror of what I'm learning. Only Easton can move.
You asshole! You asshole!
He screams and rushes at Steve. Detective Cousins throws himself between the two of them. The twins rush over and drag East backward. Dad rights himself and stalks forward. Every part of me wants to hurl myself at Steve again, beat the shit out of him for what he did to me, to my mom, to my family. But Ella's slim hand rests lightly on my shoulder, keeping me in check. I once joked that she held my leash, and it's true. I'm a better person when she's around. More controlled, more worthy. And after all she's gone through tonight, I don't want to add to her pain by pummeling her father.
How long did this go on?
Dad demands, his angry gaze fixed on his best friend. Steve swipes a shaky hand across his mouth.
She came on to me.
How long?
Dad roars. Cousins radios for help. I need some backup in here, Stat. I've got 5 royals and they're out for blood. Steve's eyes never leave my father.
It was only once. She took advantage of me.
With a choked noise, Dad turns to Ella.
How long?
I don't know. There was just this letter.
She holds out a crumpled piece of stationery with the lower left corner torn off. I immediately recognize it. Mom had a set of personalized paper and envelopes. She said every true lady sent a handwritten thank you note rather than make a telephone call, and never a text or an email. Dad snatches the paper from Ella's hand and scans the contents. Then, with what looks like enormous effort, he carefully folds it in half and gives it back to Ella. I nudge her arm and she drops the letter in my hand.
You deserve to rot in hell,
Dad hisses at Steve, his whole body vibrating with suppressed rage.
I stood by you for so long,
stuck up for you whenever anyone questioned your honor, your loyalty.
He takes a deep, heaving breath.
I can't stand to look at you.
I only allow myself a quick glance at the letter, and just the sight of my mom's handwriting makes my heart ache. All this time, I thought I'd driven Mom to her death. Easton blamed himself, too. The twins were torn up for months. We fell apart as a family. We hated Dad, hated ourselves. When Ella arrived unannounced, we hated her, too. We treated her like dirt. Easton and I left her on the side of the road one night and forced her to walk home. We followed her at a distance because we're not total assholes, but we'd made her believe she was alone. I don't know or understand how she forgave me, how she came to love me. As I'm lost in my head, Dad shoves past East, sidesteps Cousins, and punches Steve in the jaw so hard that the sound of the impact echoes from one side of the large living room to the other. This time when Steve wipes a hand across his mouth, blood smears across his face.
Enough, he's in police custody,
Detective Cousins snaps. Dad doesn't look away from Steve.
You bastard. You sleep with my wife, kill a woman, and try to pin it on my son.
Dad, I say hoarsely,
he's not worth it.
And he's not. Steve doesn't matter anymore. All that matters is I'm alive. Everyone I care about is alive and unhurt. I'm not going to prison. Ella's coming home with us, where she belongs. We're going to survive this, just like we survived our mother's suicide, our broken family, and our own demons. I tuck Ella's hand securely in mine and say,
let's go.
Where are we going? She asks.
Home.
She's silent for a moment.
That's good.
Yeah, Easton says, coming up on Ella's other side. Your room's a mess.
Because you keep watching football in there, she mutters as we lead her away. I expect you to clean it the moment we get back.
Easton stops at the penthouse door and looks at her incredulously.
I'm Easton Royal. I don't clean shit.
Dad sighs. The twins snicker. Even the cops look like they're trying not to laugh. I clasp Bella's hand more firmly in mine and we walk out with each of my brothers falling in line. Behind us is the tormented and terrible past. In front of us is our unblemished future. I'm not looking back again.
Chapter 36. Reed.
It takes all of 48 hours for Halston Greer to get another hearing for me. This time I'm not even annoyed that Judge Delacorte is assigned to the case. There's something awesomely ironic about the fact that he's going to have to rule on the motion to dismiss all the charges against me after he tried to bribe my father.
Given your past with this judge, my advice is to look suitably penitent throughout the proceeding, Greer advises as we wait for Delacorte to appear from his chambers.
The hearing was supposed to start 15 minutes ago, but the judge is sulking in the back, trying to delay the inevitable. Greer's warning is unnecessary. I haven't smiled much since I got the call from Ella on Saturday night.
All rise, the Honorable Judge Delacorte is presiding.
Honorable my ass, East mutters loudly behind me.
Greer is facing forward, but his co-counsel, Sonia Clark, turns to glare at my brother. Out of the corner of my eye, I see Easton making a zipping motion across his lips. Ella is beside him, and she's sitting strangely close to Dinah. I guess the two of them formed a weird bond the night that Steve confessed to killing Brooke because he'd mistakenly thought she was Dinah. I still think Dinah is a snake, but holy shit am I grateful to her. Yes, she blackmailed my brother, but she also saved Ella's life. If she hadn't grabbed that gun out of the safe and come to Ella's aid, things could have ended a lot differently. Thanks to Dinah, Ella is safe, and Steve O'Halloran will be behind bars, charged with the crime that everyone thought I committed. Every time I think about it, I want to punch something. That bastard was actually going to let me rot in jail for something I didn't do. I know he's Ella's father, but I'll never be able to forgive him for what he did. I don't think Ella can either. Greer tugs on my jacket as a reminder to get to my feet. I stand, as ordered, and then wait for the bailiff to give us the okay to sit down. With his black robe and gray hair, Judge Delacorte looks the part of an honorable man, but we all know he's nothing but scum of the earth, burying the crimes of his punk-ass rapist son. Delacorte takes a seat and begins to leaf through the motion papers from the attorneys. All the while, the entire courtroom is on their feet. What a jackass. After 10 long minutes tick off the clock, the bailiff finally clears his throat. His red face displays his embarrassment. Not his fault his boss is a total dickweed. We all feel bad for him. The cough gets Judge Delacorte's attention. He raises his head, looks us over, then nods.
You may be seated. Does the state have a motion to make?
There's a lot of shuffling as people take their seats. The DA remains standing. It's got to be tough to do this, admit that they were wrong about all the evidence, and nearly steamrolled an innocent kid into prison.
Yes, we do. And what is it?
Delacorte's impatience isn't even thinly disguised. He's irritated he has to be here, even though this is his job. Stoically, the DA announces,
The DA would move to dismiss the charges. Under what grounds?
It's all laid out in the paperwork in front of Delacorte, but because he hates his life, he's going to try to make everyone else equally unhappy.
The grounds that new evidence suggests that the wrong individual has been charged, we now have another suspect in custody. And this new evidence is the testimony of the girlfriend of the formerly accused and the estranged wife of the newly accused.
Yes.
Delacorte huffs on the bench. And the DA's office deems this credible?
He clearly doesn't want to let me off the hook. I shoot a semi-worried glance toward Greer, who gives a nearly imperceptible shake of his head. Okay, then. If Greer is unflustered, then I'm not getting my boxers in a bunch.
We do. We have a recording of Mr. O'Halloran confessing to the crime. The statements of the victims are corroborated by the initial physical evidence at the scene, as well as post-incident statements heard by Detective Cousins, Detective Schmidt, and Officer Thomas, wherein Mr. O'Halloran admitted that he'd mistaken the identity of the deceased for his wife.
Are you absolutely certain you have the right person this time? Last time I was here, you swore that Mr. Royal was the perpetrator of this violent crime. In fact, we had a sentencing hearing scheduled due to the fact that he was going to plead guilty. Were you wrong then or now? Delacorte says sarcastically. The lawyer's cheeks grow red. We were wrong then, he says, and despite his embarrassment, his voice is firm. It's so obvious that Judge Delacorte doesn't want to rule in my favor. He wants me to rot. Unfortunately for him, he's going to bed tonight with bitter failure in his mouth. He picks up his gavel. Motion sustained, he snaps. Anything else, counsel? Yes, one more thing. The prosecutor turns and whispers something to his co-counsel. Greer begins to pack up his things. Are we done here? I ask. Greer nods. Yes, congratulations. You're officially free of all of this. I take my first full breath since walking into the courthouse. Thanks. I shake his hand, even though the real person I should be thanking is behind me. Greer, on the other hand, believed I should plead guilty in spite of my innocence. East reaches over the small railing, but his high five halts in midair at the next words out of the prosecutor's mouth. We'd like to bring charges against Stephen George O'Halloran. I suck in a breath as Steve exits a side room, accompanied by a uniformed guard. Steve enters the courtroom and walks to the defense table, but his expressionless gaze doesn't once stray in my direction, or his daughter's. Read them off, counselor, Judge Delacorte says in a bored tone, as if this is an everyday occurrence. I guess it is for him, but it's not for us. Not for Ella. I glance over my shoulder to find that her face is a mixture of horror and awful sadness, so I murmur to East, get her out of here. My brother nods, obviously agreeing that Ella doesn't need to hear all these charges read out against her father. Come on, Ella, let's go, we're done here, he says in a low voice. But Ella refuses to leave. She grabs Dinah's hand, of all people, and Dinah, the gold digger, the blackmailer, grips my girl's hand in return. The two of them lean against each other as the prosecutor reads from the indictment. Stephen George O'Halloran, hereinafter known as defendant, in the county of Bayview in the state of North Carolina, did knowingly commit murder in the second degree which resulted in the death of Brooke Anna Davidson. Will the defendant step forward? I move out of the way and watch in stupefied amazement as Greer pulls out another file. Holy hell. He wasn't packing up. He was putting my case away and preparing to defend Steve. Steve buttons his jacket as he approaches the bench. He looks confident and composed, but he still refuses to meet my eyes. How do you plead? Delacorte asks. Not guilty, Steve says in a loud, clear voice. My hand curls into a fist. Not guilty, my ass. Want to end him? I want to drive his face into the wood table until it's a bloody, unrecognizable mess. A hand clasps my wrist. Look up and stare at Ella's lovely, unhappy face and realize what I was on the verge of doing. Closing my eyes, I lean my forehead against hers. You ready to go home?
I am.
I take her hand and then we leave the courtroom, and Steve, behind us, my family filing out after us. Outside, a few reporters rush at us, but the royal boys are big and intimidating. We form a protective circle around Ella and keep the vultures away as we exit the courthouse. Dad meets us by his Mercedes. You're going to come home with us, Ella.
For good?
She asks warily. He smiles. For good. Greer is filing guardianship papers as we speak. Smile fades quickly, though. We're using Steve's current legal troubles as grounds for an emergency ruling. I don't miss the sorrow swimming in my father's eyes. Steve's betrayal hurt all of us, but it hurt Dad the most. Steve was his best friend. But the asshole was willing to let me go to prison for a crime that Steve committed. And he... My throat tightens as I remember the other betrayal. Steve had an affair with my mom. I want to throw up just thinking about it, and I almost wish none of us had read the letter. But a part of me is glad we did. For so long I blamed myself for Mom's death, wondering if my fighting and my recklessness was what drove her to suicide. East thought it was his pill addiction that sent her over the edge. At least now we know the truth. Mom killed herself because of guilt over her affair with Dad's best friend, and she thought Dad was cheating on her, too. Steve had led her to believe that. Fucking Steve. I hope I never again have to lay eyes on that man in my life. Ella! The bastard's ears must have been burning because he suddenly appears on the courthouse steps. Oh, shit, East mutters. The twins echo his curse with more colorful ones of their own. I entertain the idea of throwing Ella over my shoulder, diving into the car, and speeding away. But I hesitate too long because Steve's already making his way across the parking lot. Dad takes a menacing step forward, placing himself between Ella and Steve.
You should go, he commands.
No, I want to talk to my daughter. Steve leans around Dad, pleading with Ella. Ella, listen to me. I was drugged up the other night. I think Dinah must have put something in my drink. You know I'd never hurt you, and I didn't hurt Brooke either. You misunderstood everything I said that night.
Pain flickers across her face.
Really? That's the story we're going with?
You have to trust me.
Trust you? Are you kidding me? You killed Brooke and tried to pin it on Reed. I don't know who you are, and I don't want to know.
She wrenches the car door open and climbs inside. The slamming door puts all of us in motion. The twins and Easton get into Sawyer's Rover, while I join Ella in Dad's car. Dad remains with Steve, but their angry voices are muffled behind the closed windows of the Mercedes. I don't even give a shit what they're saying. I trust Dad to tell Steve to go to hell, where he deserves to burn for eternity. Ella peers at me with sad eyes as I gently put an arm around her.
You guys were rough on me when I first arrived,
she starts. I wince at this.
I know. But you all came around, and I had a family for the first time.
Tears drip down her face. Her hands are clenched in her lap, white around the knuckles. I cover them with my palm and feel the warm tears fall on the back of my hand.
When Steve arrived, I gave him a hard time, but secretly I thought it was kind of cool that he was so excited to be a dad. His rules were ridiculous, but the girls at school said it was normal, and sometimes it made me feel like he really cared.
I swallow around the knot in my throat. Her words are so full of pain, and I don't know how to take it away.
I thought,
she continues between gulps of air,
sometimes I thought that my mom was wrong to haul me around the country, running from one bad relationship to another. I thought maybe it would have been better if I'd grown up with Steve, an O'Halloran, not a Harper.
Oh, hell. I haul her into my lap, placing her wet face in my neck. I know, baby. I love my mom, but I think bad thoughts about her, too, sometimes. I get that she couldn't live with herself, but she should have tried, because we needed her.
I stroke Ella's hair and press a kiss on her temple.
I don't think being angry or resentful that our mothers let us down is disloyal. Her small body heaves.
I wanted him to love me.
Oh, baby, something's wrong with Steve. He's not capable of loving anyone but himself. That's his flaw, not yours.
I know. It just hurts.
The driver's door opens and Dad climbs in. Everything okay back there? He asks quietly. His eyes meet mine in the rearview mirror. I remain silent because I know it's a question for Ella. She shudders and sighs and then lifts her head.
Yeah, I'm a mess, but I'm going to be okay.
She slides off my lap but keeps her head on my shoulder. Dad backs out of the parking lot and starts to drive home.
I told Val once that you and I are mirrors,
Ella whispers to me,
that we fit in some weird way.
I know exactly what she means. The complicated feelings we have for our mothers, for their weakness and frailty, for their hidden strengths and the love they showed us, for the selfishness that affected us. All these things are part of what twisted us up inside. But somehow those tangled strands fused until we were whole again. Ella makes me whole. I make her whole. I used to be scared of the future. I didn't know where I'd end up, didn't know if the anger and bitterness inside me would ever truly go away, if I could ever feel worthy or find someone who'd be able to see through the asshole I pretend to be to the rest of the world. But I'm not scared anymore, and I did find someone who sees me, who really, truly sees me. And I see her, too. Ella Harper is all I'm ever going to see because she's my future. She's my steel and my fire and my salvation. She's everything.
Chapter 37 Ella. 1 week later. What's this? I ask when I get out of the bathroom, dressed in my favorite hanging out clothes, a t-shirt of Reed's and a pair of shorts. Today's dance team practice ran long, so I told Reed to go on home without me. Once I got back, I made him wait until I showered, even though he claims he doesn't care if I'm sweaty. Now, I walk into my room and find an assortment of colorful brochures on my bed. Most of them show pictures of teens clutching schoolbooks against their chests.
Pick one, Reed says.
His eyes are fixed on the TV. As I get closer, I realize they're college brochures, about 10 of them. One what? Pick where we're going to college. We? Curious, I flip one open. UNC, the brochure declares, has been granting degrees since the 18th century. Duh. He rolls over on his side, crumpling half the glossy pamphlets under his fit body. We're choosing together? I say in surprise. Yep. You said you wanted to dance, so there's a couple here that offer a good arts degree. He rummages through the pile and pulls out a red and white brochure. So, UNC Greensboro offers a dance degree, and so does UNC in Charlotte. They're both accredited by the National Association of Schools of Dance. A familiar heat starts to course through my body. Did you research all this stuff? Sure did. I suck in my lower lip so I don't break out in tears. This has to be one of the nicest, most thoughtful things anyone's ever done for me. I don't do a good enough job of hiding my emotions, because Reed vaults over the bed and drags me against him. His eyes search mine. Are you upset about this? No, this is so sweet, I blubber. Smiling, he sits on the edge of the bed and positions me between his legs. He looks half embarrassed, half proud. I figured it was the least I could do. What were you planning to do before Dad kidnapped you? Ha, so you admit he kidnapped me. He grins. I just said that. Fine, I was going to go to community college and get an associate's in business, and then take accounting classes for 2 years and hopefully find a steady job counting numbers all day. I plan to wear a lot of khakis, eat in the cafeteria, and maybe have a dog to come home to. His smile grows broader. Well, now you can go to an arts college and live off your trust fund. What about your business degree? He shrugs. I can get that anywhere. It's not like Dad's not going to hire me. He's dying for us to get into the family business. Gid has zero interest. East likes fast cars. The twins are more like... He breaks off before he says Steve's name. The twins like the planes and aren't interested in running the business. I pull out of his embrace and go to the dresser, where I pull out the flyer I found on the Astor Park bulletin board tonight. Haley had pointed it out. I return to Reed and trade his UNC Greensboro brochure for the flyer. What's this? He turns it over. It's an amateur boxing circuit. I know you like to hit things, but you probably shouldn't go to the docks anymore. This will let you hit and get hit, and it's perfectly legal. I'm not saying you should do it for the rest of your life, but... I like it, Reed declares. Yeah? I can do this, go to classes, and come home to you, right? I melt against him. Right. A grin lifts my lips. Oh, and Val said to tell you to take Wade along. She thinks it'll be good for him to get punched in his pretty face every now and then. Reed snickers. I thought they were together now. They are, I laugh as I think about our best friends. They've been an official couple for a week, and already Val is laying down the law. But she's still making him pay for fooling around with someone else. He rolls his eyes. Chicks are nuts. We are not. I pinch his side in warning. Oh, and by the way, I decided I'm going to take dance lessons. It's the one thing Jordan does that I'm really envious of. And I know I'm not going to be as good as her with a year's worth of dance lessons, but I still think it would be cool. Dad would love that. Reed pulls me on top of him, and I rub against his deliciously hard body. Our lips meet softly and sweetly. His hands creep under the fabric of my shorts to press me tighter against him. We kiss until we're breathless, and then I roll away, because if we keep this up, we'll be undressing each other in no time. Dinner's soon, and we've all made a conscious effort to start having meals as a family. Plus Gideon's coming tonight, and I have a gift for him. How are you doing with the whole... Reed trails off. As usual, he doesn't mention Steve in anything other than vague terms. I'm good, I assure him. And you shouldn't be afraid to say Steve's name in front of me. Just don't call him my father, because he's not. He never was. No, Reed agrees. He was never your dad. There's not much of him in you. I hope not. Except, as much as I want to deny it, Steve is my dad, and that trust fund Reed referenced earlier, it's all of Steve's money that he signed over to me, with Callum serving as the trustee. I've already reduced that trust by about half, but it was for a good cause. I think Gideon is going to be very, very happy tonight, when he finds out about the deal I made with Dinah. In exchange for half of Steve's money, she burned all the blackmail evidence she had against him in Savannah. I know it's gone for good, because I stood at the fireplace with her while she lit the match and torched the USB drive, the printed photos, and the legal papers, which she haughtily informed me would never have been filed. It was the same fireplace where Brooke and her baby died, but I try not to think about that too much. Brooke is gone. So is Callum's unborn child. Nothing is going to bring them back, though, and all we can do now is put the whole tragic ordeal behind us. I reach out to hold Reed's hand. Are you okay? Are you feeling better about everything?
Yeah, he admits. I'm definitely relieved I'm not going to prison, but I'm still pissed at Steve. And I'm angry at my mother, too, but I'm trying to let it go.
I completely understand. What about Easton? Does he seem weird to you lately? Easton has been strangely subdued this past week.
I don't know. I think he might be all twisted up over a girl.
I flip over on my side. Seriously? The side of Reed's mouth quirks up.
Seriously.
Wow. I shake my head in astonishment. Hell's frozen over.
Yep.
Before I have a chance to grill him more, Callum yells from the foyer.
Dinner's ready.
Reed pulls me to my feet.
Come on, let's go downstairs. The family's waiting.
I love that word. And I love the boy, who's taking my hand and leading me out the door, so we can join our family. My family.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Twisted Palace, Book 3 of The Royals, written by Aaron Watt, performed by Zachary Weber and Angela Gothels. Producer, Mike Charzuk. Copyright 2016 by Aaron Watt. Production copyright 2016 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc. If you enjoyed this audiobook, be sure to get more books in The Royals series today.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.